And as you take your seats, please turn with me to the book of Philippians. Philippians. And chapter 1. We will read together beginning with verse 3. Although our text really is verse 5, but let's begin with verse 3. If you are there, Philippians chapter 1, verse 3. I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always and in every prayer of mine, for you all, making my prayer with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now. Allow me to read the next verse too. And I'm sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. Well, brethren, as I announced last week, this is the particular Sunday when I take my privilege in preaching what I call an anniversary sermon. And this is what I am doing this afternoon or this evening. And as I have been praying and seeking the Lord as to what to share with you, it came to my realization that this year marks 20 years of gospel partnership with Heartcry Missionary Society. 20 years. And I just thought that it was right for us to pause, and especially for myself, to use this opportunity to thank God for that partnership. But not only that, but to also learn from that partnership and to challenge us afresh in terms of what can we learn concerning gospel partnerships. And if you notice, the title for my sermon is an appeal, it's a challenge. It is saying, cherish long-term gospel partnerships. Cherish long-term gospel partnerships. We will see it in a moment in Philippians and chapter 1, as we see the reason why the Apostle Paul is able to speak so glowingly about thanking God for the church in Philippi. He gives the reason there, and the reason is in verse 5 at the very end. And it is the statement that because of your partnership in the gospel, then he says, from the first day until now. From the first day until now. That's a persevering gospel partnership. It is a long-term gospel partnership. And the Apostle Paul is saying, I thank God for you. Now, the beginning of our relationship with Heartcry Missionary Society, thankfully, has been captured for us in the book in which we record our history as a church, and that is By Fire and By Cloud. This is what it says, and I quote, the next important phase in the church's missions efforts began on Friday, 15th January 1999, through a phone call that came from a Mr. Paul Washer in the USA. Paul had been a missionary in Peru. Soon after returning to the USA, he was handed tapes of sermons preached by Pastor Mbewe in July of 1998 at the Southern Baptist Founders Conference in Alabama, USA. Having listened to those messages, he rang Zambia immediately, asking if his newly founded Heart Cry Missionary Society could join hands with Kawata Baptist Church to send local Zambian men into the mission field. By June 1999, so that's 6 months later, a memorandum of understanding was drawn up. And by December of that year, the first man was sent out, Pastor Lichawa Tole, who went to start Chisomo Baptist Church in Matero, by far Zambia's largest low-income residential area. In February 2000, the elders challenged the church as follows, and I quote, "In the last couple of months, as we have sought the Lord's face as elders, we have observed his providential guidance leading us into a very challenging direction, namely that of missions. In many ways, we have felt like the young church in Antioch because we are still a young church ourselves, with so many needs still outstanding in our midst. Yet the Lord's leading seems to be clear. He wants us to set apart men into church planting work, and we must trust and obey. Play your part in the unfolding of this by prayer, financial support, and actual evangelistic participation. By our next members' meeting, we may have 3 full-time missionaries. That is not a small thing. These will all need our regular support in terms of prayer, finances, and visitation, etc. Do not distance yourself from all this as an individual, rather as an individual, as if Kawata Baptist Church is other people. Every member of Kawata Baptist Church must see this as your challenge." End of quote. Well, sure enough, before long, Kennedy Sokoto and Wilson Kamanga were to answer God's call and join the role of missionaries being sent out by KBC to Kafue and Choma, respectively. That's the end of the quotation from "By Fire and by Cloud." What is amazing about this relationship is that Heart Cry began to support us immediately without ever having met any of us, ever having come to Zambia. So for the next 5 years, up to the year 2005, that was the situation. Our eldership grew more and more uncomfortable about receiving support from an organization or a church that doesn't even know us at all. And so by the year 2005, we sent a threat to them. We said if they did not come, we're not going to accept their financial support the following year. Paul Washer came in 2005 in August, spoke at our August conference, and as they say, the rest is history. 20 years later, with their help, We've been able to plant about 30 churches, both within Zambia and across Africa. We've been able to recommend to them other national networks, and consequently, they are now supporting networks in a number of other countries around Africa. They've also come alongside us in a number of other ways. They have supported our internship program, and as I speak now, we've had slightly over 50 pastoral interns that have passed through our hands and are involved in ministry all over Africa and indeed even in the outside world, as far as Germany, as far as Canada. They've also supported our pastoral training programs. And for your own information, something you might not be aware of, at any one time, we are training no less than 120 pastors. At any one time, as we're speaking right now, in the colleges supported by Hatcraft, we are training no less than 120 men. They also supported our bookstore, Evergreen Bookstore, with finances. And I want to add, we didn't ask them. They came, they saw how empty our bookstore was, and they offered themselves. They said, we want to give you money on one condition, that you send us reports on how the bookstore is going. We accepted, and they sent us those finances. I want to say two quick things before we plunge into this pastoral scripture. First of all, by the way, with respect to our intention program, the two houses we own actually are the ones who bought them for us. Both 45 Bolly Street, and I'm not too sure what we call the other one. I think they call it the Libala House. They're the ones who bought them for us, and consequently, we can house 6 interns at any one time. But what I wanted to say was this, that here is a partnership where they treat us as equals. It's not from the top downwards, zero. We talk across the table as equal partners in the work of the gospel. It is not a top-down situation. I want to thank God for that. Let me emphasize that, because it is rare. I want to thank the Lord for that. But the second thing that I want to say is that it's our longest partnership in the work of the gospel. The longest partnership. And that's why this long-term aspect is something I wanted to commemorate, and at the same time, something I want us to learn from. I've never forgotten when Paul Washer came here and attended our conference, and then he asked me, he said, "Now, Kunran, which of the churches are supporting what you're doing here?" I said, "Zero." And he said, "That's not possible." So at that time, I called whoever was our church treasurer, I can't remember who it was, I said, "Talk to him." And he asked him, he said, "Which churches or organizations send you money?" And the church treasurer said, "Nah." He said, "I'm going back to go and tell them, because they speak so much about Conrad today, what about myself? I thought you must be drowning with money from America." But what he did is the following year, without being a speaker at our conference, he just came with 4 other pastors. Not to preach, but to simply come and show them the work. And the reason why I'm mentioning it is because one of those 4 pastors became the second longest supporting pastor and church after that. Up to today, that church supports us with respect to our work. And in fact, they're one of the churches I met with in the course of the year about our need to buy land for the SCU, and they gave fairly substantially. So here's a partnership that really we should be thanking God for in terms of its rarity. Here is a partnership where we are equals in the work of ministry, and here's a partnership that has stickability that has gone on up to this particular point. I really want to say out of this that if our own gospel partnerships are to last through thick and thin, we need to learn a number of basic lessons from the book of Philippians, illustrated by this partnership that we've had the privilege of being a part of for 20 solid years. 20. First of all, let's go back to our text. I want you to notice how the Apostle Paul is full of thanksgiving for this particular church. I thank my God, he says in verse 3, in all my remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, for you all, making my prayers with joy. Let's put together very quickly the history between Paul and this church. The Apostle Paul had been sent from the church in Antioch earlier on, together with Barnabas, and then later on with Silas. And they had gone church planting across Asia. A time came when they were still trying to plant churches in Asia, but according to the way Dr. Luke summarizes what was happening in the book of Acts, the Spirit was preventing them in Luke 16 from going either to the left or to the right. And so they just kept going until they reached the coast. The next was a body of water. That's how they began to wonder why God had brought them that far. Paul, at night, saw a vision of somebody in Philippi across the body of water saying, come over to help us. And that's how he shared with his friends. Luke was one of them, and they agreed that, I think the Lord wants us to go over. And so that's how they crossed into Europe for the very first time, into Philippi for the very first time, and ministered there. It was the first gospel opportunity. We are told that the first place they preached was just outside that same city, where they found a prayer meeting of women. They preached, and we know the story. Lydia, a businesswoman, a very wealthy businesswoman, got converted. Things continued in the process. A young lady who had been a medium used in basically witchcraft also got converted miraculously as Paul and Silas were agitated by the things that she was saying. Out of all that, she became the second convert. And then thirdly and lastly, there was an agitation that took place in the city. They were arrested, thrown into the cells, and while they were in the cells and praising God, a third convert came through, and it was the jailer, the local civil servant who was working in prison. Again, we know all those stories. So all these then became the first converts of this church. A businesswoman, a young lady delivered from spiritism, and a civil servant. And of course, they both had families. That is, Lydia had a family, and the Philippian jailer also had a family. And together they made up the first church. Paul and Silas labored there in due season. They were sent from that church, and they went on to plant other churches across Macedonia and further into Achaia, all the way to Athens and Corinth and so on, and made their way back to report in Antioch. But the point I'm stressing out of this is that the church in Philippi basically took over the support of the brethren. The Apostle Paul speaks about this in chapter 4. Let's quickly pick there. Philippians chapter 4, verse 14. It says that, yet it was kind of you to share my trouble. And this trouble is in terms of he's in prison and they've sent him supplies so that he can have food, medical supplies, and toiletries, and so on while he is in prison. Verse 15, and you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, and what it really means there is the beginning of missions enterprises in Europe. That's really all it means by that phrase. When I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving except you only. So from the very beginning, they took over the work of church planting. And that supported Paul's ministry right into the rest of Europe. According to scholars, by the time the Apostle Paul was writing this letter, he had been ministering after the time he was in Philippi for at least 10 years. At least 10 years. So here were 10 years of a growing relationship, a very helpful relationship, a relationship that went beyond the immediate situation. In other words, Paul was no longer planting churches at this point. He was in prison. And for most of us, that means, let's move on. We need to support someone else. After all, the guy's in prison now. Now, they sent Epaphroditus. They provided so much and said, go in. Go and minister to Paul while he is in prison. Well, that's the background. We learn at least three quick things from here, which we need to apply to ourselves as well. Because partnership is not just about receiving, it's also about giving. We too must be partners with others in the gospel. The first thing that we learn from this is that true gospel partnerships are about relationships. Real relationships, building deep relationships, being very personal in getting to know the individuals that we are in partnership with in the gospel. Now, the message from which I take quite a number of my notes is the message I've preached in a number of places before. And one of the things that I've said over and over again is that we live in a day when lasting relationships are extremely rare. Extremely rare. We don't bother to build deep gospel relationships.
We don't.
We not pick up the phone, and these days we can pick it up, it's always in your hands. To ring a missionary and just say, so how's the family? You know, how are the kids? How are things going there? And so we just don't. We don't think this is about building an actual relationship and continuing it. And friends, here is Paul writing to these people. And one of the things he's saying is this: I actually pray for you. I pray for you. I remember you in my prayer. I don't have the money to send in your direction, but there's something I can still do for you. I can pray for you. I thank my God in all my remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine for you all, making my prayer with joy. And really, if I was to speak about what cry for a moment, without embarrassing them too much, this is not, on the internet, it's precisely that. That they were not just thinking in terms of sending a check our way every so often. We've actually built real friendships. And they've done it from their end. There's no sense whatsoever that you are just someone to receive money across the ocean. No, it's real deep friendship. How are we doing that deliberately? Ministry leaders, our weakest point is exactly here. The partners try to enter into relationship with us, especially when we need, we ask, and they do help us. And as soon as they've helped us, we just go on to get a report out of the ministry. After that, it's easier to get water out of the rock. It's easy. They moved on until the following year, when again finances are needed, and then who are those who helped us last time? No, brethren, it must be about building relationships. If we are unable to build, we can at least pray. And to pray in a very personal way. Make a phone call. Send a text message. I'm praying for you. Are there two or three things I can pray for today? And because of your faithfulness in your work, I pray with thanksgiving, with joy for you. I thank God for you. It's easier these days to simply split up. It's the easiest. It's not about deep, lasting relationships. It's together for a moment, and then the first excuse, bam, we have parted ways. And in a sense, that's why we insisted earlier, even with Hatkra, that if you don't come over, there's no way we can continue. And the reason we gave was quite simple. It's very easy, if you don't know us, for you to believe a lie about us. Very easy. All you need to do is to come and hear a story that Pastor Mbewe now has a brand new vehicle and someone is going to say to you, it's your money. Very easy. But when you have mingled with individuals, you've looked each other in the face, you have wrestled over Christian ethics and Christian integrity together. When stories come, you shake your head. And you know what he said? I know him. I know him. I've been there. I know his people. And that's the reason why we insisted in that way. In the same way, brethren, build real relationships in the work of ministry with partners. Build real relationships. Because that's what partnership is all about. I'll come on later on to speak about the ingredients of love and trust that make up these relationships. But the second thing that I really want us to throw into the works here is the fact that when the Apostle Paul rejoices in this friendship, it's because of the contrast in actual experience. You see, we only really treasure one another when we've been failed by others. When we've been failed by others. So when the Apostle Paul here is saying, because of your partnership in the gospel, from the first day until now, this stickability, it is because others had abandoned him along the way. And we know a few of them. One of them is John Mark. The very first time they set out to go into Asia from Antioch, they set out Barnabas and his cousin, John Mark. It wasn't long before John Mark abandoned them. And he abandoned them primarily because of issues of relationships. Barnabas was the one who was his cousin, and to begin with, as I've proved to you before, he was the team leader. Somewhere along the way, Paul became the team leader. And it's very clear that John Mark did not take kindly to that. That Paul should be the one leading the pack. And consequently, he abandoned the team and went back. Later on, I'm sure out of Barnabas' ministry in his life, he saw his wrong and sought to be reconciled to Paul. There was nothing wrong with reconciliation, but Paul was not willing that John Mark should get back onto the team. And there was such a sharp difference with Barnabas that team broke up altogether. The team broke up. So Paul was hurt again by this abandonment that took place. Later on, he writes to Timothy towards the end of his own ministry about yet someone else who had abandoned him, and it was Demas. It was Demas, out of love for the world. And therefore, as he was in prison and he receives help from the Philippian church at the hands of Epaphroditus, who then lives with him for some time. In fact, he even falls sick, dangerously sick, almost to the point of death when he was there with Paul. But the Lord had mercy on him. He recovered, and Paul sent him back to Philippi. Paul thanks God for the stickability of the Philippian church. And brethren, ministry is like that. You can try to build relationships. Some don't last. In fact, some sort of live in a huff. Treasure those who stick with you. Treasure them. Rejoice in them. But here is the other way as well.
We too should learn to so build relationships in ministry and in partnerships in these ministries that last in terms of we ourselves being supporters and partners at last. I want to repeat, these are rare, but that's what we need to be ourselves. That's what we need to be. Individuals that partner with deep relationships and for the long haul. For the long haul. There are times when in partnerships which we have, we've had good relationships and good partners. And the time has come when some of our partners have said, well, as soon as this church is planted, thank you very much for moving on to others. And we don't begrudge it. We say thank you, and they move on. But we also should show them that it was not just about the money. It's about real relationships. We must still be able to say, hey, how are you doing there now? 5 years later, 10 years later, through a phone call. So how is so-and-so? And how is so-and-so in that church? You know what? They begin to realize this is not just about money. It's about real Christian relationships. And often they treasure you because they've experienced others who, when they said, the money is no more, the relationship was no more. How are we doing? I'm concerned about those of us who are in ministries. How are we doing in terms of the building of relationships? Are we in the category of those who abandon? Those who give up? Or are we in the category of those who are faithful? Who can be depended upon? Who are interested in long-term relationships? May God help us to be like the Philippian church. To be like the Philippian church. To hang in there. In the midst of all the talk, often it's cheap talk, it's false talk, it's exaggerated talk, to still hang in there, wanting to be a partner for life. Thirdly, and lastly, I told you about the content, the ingredients. You see, what makes partnerships last? It's love and trust. It's love and trust. In our morning series, after we dealt with godliness, the next attribute or characteristic or virtue that we talked about is brotherly love. Brotherly love. It's the love that takes place in the family. It's love that goes both ways. Brotherly love. It's an in-house kind of love. That's what is being talked about here. That's what ought to develop, that ought to be built up among us as God's people. The Apostle Paul, I want to repeat, was no longer able to serve. It wasn't an illness, it was an imprisonment. The church loved him as a brother. And they went out of their way to be kind to him. Some of you might not know this, but the deacons will. I have a medical condition. I sleep on a machine actually for over 10 years now. I went to India for medical treatment in the hope that I'll be off the machine. Well, it never worked. But here's the point. Heartcraft paid for it. So nothing to do with the missionary work happening. He paid for it. But that's love. That's love. Somebody just can't come up tomorrow and say, hey, this guy is bad, get rid of him. I'll say, hang on. I needed treatment. This guy or these guys went out of their way to make sure I'm flown to that place with my wife, medical fees, everything cut up in the hope that I'll get off this mission. Brethren, that's love. That's love. Do we think like that? Do we? In terms of partnerships, do we think love? Let me do something at a practical level at this time. That's what that person needs. That's what that person's wife needs. That's what that person's family needs. Or is it strictly business? It's all in the budget, it's out of the budget. If our partnerships are going to last, love must be in the works. Let me say it again. If real Christian partnerships in ministry are going to last, we must be a loving people. Yes, others will love us. Let us love them too. Love is essential to Christianity. And I'm not even talking about Christian ministry. Christianity. It's essential. With the missionaries. One of the things that bothers me, brethren, because we're supposed to be their partners in ministry. One of the things that bothers me is our levels of unfaithfulness to our pledges. How? They come here, they share with us their reports, and guess what we say? We'll support you. We'll support you. As soon as they get on with their buses and they are gone, we need to be reminded every time to be reminded. No! That's not Christianity. Christianity is about love. Brother and your family, we love you. We will do our part to make sure that we support you. Go and live our way.
And when anything goes wrong there, they will know.
We have their backs. They will know. Because we love them. We love them. We should never end up in a situation where now we have to start having names and making sure that you give and we tick and you give and if you don't, we now know who has it and we can come and no. Love! That's the dynamo that moves the Christian church forward. It is. I don't know about you, but I have definitely, I've given you just one example, I've definitely felt the love of the Lord. 20 years. The second aspect, and with that I must hurry on to close, is trust. Trust. It's the second cement or glue that keeps us together. That I can trust you. And you can trust me. And trust is built on integrity. On integrity. And one of the things we have done annually is to have our accounts audited by an independent auditor. We send an annual financial report to all our partners. Everything is visible. And let me add, we fire missionaries. Who tried to swim in. It's done, finished. Our partners don't even know before. We report to them after. We say, this guy is being fired. This is what happened. It's something that could have easily been hidden. But you see, it fosters a relationship when they know that the people on that other side are not sweeping dirt under the carpet. They are not. There are no gray areas as far as finances are concerned. Systems are in place. We can trust them. And part of what builds trust is simply reports. That's it. Reports. It builds trust when somebody is able to write back reports. When you are taking forever as a ministry to write your reports, it's already suggestive of the fact that your records are in disarray. No, by Friday. Then, just wait for Sunday. If you are working properly, your reports come out like clockwork. Like clockwork. If it's a quarterly report, you know that end of March, end of June, end of September, end of December, it's clockwork. Your friends have confidence. Brethren, take this seriously. Relationships are not built on love alone. They are built on trust as well. When trust is broken, love may still be there, but the relationship will still be broken. The relationship will still be broken. So the issue of trust is all important. And often, this is the point I want to make, we on the receiving end must be the ones who should be trustworthy. Trustworthy. We should be the ones paying the price, not being proud, but paying the price of being trustworthy by being thus transparent in terms of the things that we are doing. Often, when potential partners begin engaging with us, that's basically what I do. I say to them, go and talk to Heartcraft. If you have any concerns about us and money matters, talk to them. Because they've been long-term partners. They can tell you whether we are trustworthy or not. What shall I say by way of closing? First of all, I think it's only right, brethren, that if God has given us partners that have lasted this long, that we treasure them. We treasure them. We don't believe the first lie that is spread about them. No, we treasure them. They have risked their own reputation. They've put their reputation on the block for us. We ought to be thankful to God, especially when they are not relating to us as bosses over us, but as equal partners. Equal partners. A number of churches that support our missions work, the pastor said to me that they told them that why send money to Kawata through us? Well, come on. You know them. Just work with them better. Work with them better. We don't need to be here. Now, that's true partnership. There's no sense of wanting to monopolize anything. Build relationships with them. Build relationships. They are a breath of fresh air. And therefore, I wanted to dedicate this sermon as an expression of gratitude to God for them. But I also wanted us to emulate them in our gospel partnerships. Brethren, let's be biblical. Let's be biblical. Let's throw away this business of I've signed a check, it's gone. What's happening there? Who they are? And everything else? I'm not interested. The following month then, I put it in the envelope. It's gone. Let's be concerned that we should have lasting relationships. That we should be the ones who persevere in the relationships rather than the ones who fail. Let's also ensure that there is love and trust in the relationships that we have. Let us emulate them. If we are on the receiving side, yes, let us love nonetheless, and let us trust. If we are on the giving side, as we often are with missionaries, again, same thing. Let us love them. Let us trust them. Let's make sure that the glue that keeps our relationships
is intact. I remember at our last OGM, the concern that was expressed, and it's a genuine concern, that so much support is coming from so many partners. Isn't this dangerous? It is, if you don't build relationships. It is. But if you love and you trust, and you love and you trust, that's how ministry goes forward. It's never an individual affair. Never. You lock hands with others and you work together. So if we are going to heed the call that comes ringing over the restless waves, saying, send the light, send the light, we will need to cherish especially such long-term gospel partnerships. Such long-term gospel partnerships. That's the way God's word will be done. We are on the eve of other major projects. We have the university project where we needed to buy land, and thank God most of you know this by now, that we have almost all the money in by now for the land. Praise the Lord for that. That's what partnerships are all about. We now have to talk in terms of putting up the structures for this major university. That's what partnerships will be about. Partnerships. Other projects are coming up too early for me to be about. You'll know about them in this season. Same thing. The Lord Himself provides for partnerships and partnerships. We must love. As individuals sitting in those pews, we must love and we must trust. And we will achieve great things for our God. Amen.